You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey, everyone, and Happy New Year, and welcome to the last episode of Earth Station 1 for 2018. That's right, folks. 2018 is in the rearview mirror almost, and we are wrapping it up with a final movie review. That's right. We are going to talk all about Mary Poppins Returns, the sequel that waited over 50 years to make. Yes, that's right, folks. We, you know, Disney didn't want to, you know, rush it out or anything, so they waited, let it age, and brought Mary Poppins back to the big screen. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to talk all about it. But, you know, someone else who comes down with a kite every week to the station, Mr. Mike Gordon's here.
Howdy.
Did you use an umbrella?
I'm coming down from my cloud.
Exactly.
Oh. Wait a minute. Maybe that's just it. I mean, I know, you know, maybe she doesn't live in the cloud. Maybe she lives on the station.
Ooh, yeah, she lives in space. Maybe she's the monitor.
Ooh, there's a lot of theories about what Mary Poppins is.
Yes, a Time Lord wizard. That's it.
Time Lord wizard, sure. Yeah. Among other things.
Exactly. So definitely, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun talking all about Mary Poppins. And so it should be interesting, but we are going to spoil the heck out of it. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, put us on pause. We'll wait. It's okay, but, you know, so be prepared for some spoilers tonight.
How exciting! Spoilers!
Okay, you've been warned. So definitely want to hear from you guys at home. What did you guys think of Mary Poppins? How are your holidays going? Everything going okay with the family? Please, let us know. You know, write us, EarthStation1 at ESONetwork.com. We definitely love hearing from you. And, you know, we got a lot of, you know, different things going on. Life is, you know, hectic. The holidays are now winding up. And, you know, did you spend time with the, you know, the family for Christmas? Did you have big New Year's plans? You know, what's going on with you guys? We definitely love hearing from you. And, you know, that's the best way, you know, you could do it. Unless you want to just write us a review up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or wherever you listen to our show. You know, please. It takes 2 seconds to rate us 5 stars or just, you know, just to say, hey, good job, guys. We like your show. That's all you have to write for a review. You know, that would be great if you did. We'd really, really appreciate it. All right. Let's get started with this week's Rants and Raves, where we talk all about what's going on in the world around us. Mikey, what do you got this week?
Well, you know, it is the end of 2018. And next week, as is a Air Station One tradition, we are going to wrap up the new year or the old year that was in a nice big bow for folks. And we're going to go through it, all the highs and lows and all that. So that's going to be really interesting. But I was kind of thinking, you know, obviously this week is when the year really ends. And Mike, do you find yourself is it just another day for you, or do you find that there actually is something to the year turning into a new chapter, reflecting on the past year, making goals or resolutions or plans for the new year? Is it an actual turning point for you, or is it like, nope, it's just another day?
For me, it's just another day. I try to do the resolution thing, you know, oh, I'm going to exercise more. Oh, I'm going to be nicer to people. Oh, I'm going to try to, you know, do this or do that. And it usually lasts about a day or two with me and then gets thrown out the window. So, you know, I don't do a lot of that type of thing. I try to set goals for myself every day and not just New Year's. And I try to make myself, in a lot of ways, a better person because of it. Do I find things interesting where we talk about, you know, what I'm going to do for the next year? Yeah, we do, but not anything particular for New Year's. You know, if I judge that, you know, oh, I'm spending New Year's very low key, is it going to become a low key year? Usually doesn't work that way. Or, you know, hey, we're out at a concert on New Year's Eve. I guess, you know, it's going to be a big bustling year for music. It always is that way for us. So no, not really. New Year's hasn't ever really been that way. What about with you, sir?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I think I do like to take a moment and sort of reflect. Certainly when, because we do the podcast, because we look at like the highs and lows for the year, it does make me like sort of like I go, oh, that was this year. So because I have to do the research, because I don't it, the otherwise, if I didn't have times like this, then it was all blend together and I wouldn't be able to tell one year from another, to be honest with you. Because sometimes I'm like, are you sure that was 2018, not 2017? Oh, that was 2017. I can't believe, you know, like in some ways it's very difficult to, for me to believe that Black Panther was this year, because it seems like it was such a long time ago. But on the other hand, I was like, well, you know, there are other things that seem like they were just yesterday. So I it's one of those timey-wimey things. So I try to take a few moments and sort of reflect on whether or not it was a good year or a bad year. I mean, I don't tend to dump on any years. If people ask, oh, what was a good year for you? What was a bad year for you? I can't really respond to that, because I try to, you know, I mean, every year seems to have the goods and the bad for me. So I don't try to look at it like, oh, well, even though some good things happened, it was a total dumpster fire. Because I don't know, maybe I've been fortunate, because I don't think I've ever had a year that was a complete, like, you know, one after another awful thing. And I, you know, obviously this year I've had some personal things that were not cool. But I had some personal things that were cool. So, but I think that overall, the thing that really, defined me this year was the fact that this was the year that I was turning 50. So I don't know if that affected you when you turned 50, or if you just, there was a, that was just another day for you as well. But I, that was like a thing that I was constantly, I think, over my head.
Yeah, yes and no. 50 wasn't that big of a deal for me. I think it was more traumatic when I turned 40. Many, many years ago. And it was 50 was just like, eh, you know, Judy had a party for me. And it was just like, okay, I feel the same way I felt when I was 22, feel the same way when I felt when I was 32. So it wasn't really.
I wish I felt the same way I feel.
Yeah. For me, you know, I just look in the mirror now and say, oh, who's that guy? You know, type thing. And, but yeah, it's just interesting when, you know, you get to that point, and I know most people, you probably included, it's like, I'm not as old as they say, you know, or what says on my birth certificate. You know, nobody, you know, when people look at me anyway, I don't look as old as, you know, I am anyway. And that's a great thing for good genes, as I like to say. But it's just a lot of times, you know, I don't, it's like, I'm not that age. What are you talking about? And, you know, a lot of it with, you know, the new year coming up always means my birthday is right around the corner. And when that happens, it's just like, I was actually talking to the geek girl, Angela Pritchett, earlier today about that, because her birthday is right after New Year's and hers is fairly low key. And, you know, I'm pretty much the same way. I don't like making big deals out of birthdays or anything, because it's the same thing as with like New Year's. It's just another day to me. If that makes any sense.
Do you do anything? Do you go out on New Year's Eve? Is there any traditions that you have that you do New Year's Eve or New Year's Day?
Every New Year's is different. You know, it just depends. Like last year we were in New Orleans with my sister and her husband, celebrating New Year's, and we went to go to Rock and Roll down there, and we saw a concert on New Year's Eve, and it was a ton of fun, and it was a great way to ring in the new year. But I think this year's could be fairly low key. It just, it almost like every couple of years we have, you know, fun, exciting things to do. Other times we do, you know, pretty quiet things. I've done the Times Square thing up in New York. I have no interest in going to the Peach Drop here in Atlanta. And, you know, we've gone to see, you know, concerts up in Nashville, or we've gone to concerts at the Atlanta Symphony Hall, you know, when we saw Greg Allman a couple of years ago. So, you know, we don't really have any traditions with that. So each year is different. What about, you know, I know you guys are pretty much fairly low key.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I can't remember the last, I don't even know if we've ever gone out for New Year's. We usually just stay in, we have a nice meal, and she is not one that Michelle doesn't stay up very late. She's not a late person, a night person. So she'll kind of go to bed around 8 or 9, just so she can wake up around 11, 11:30. And then we watch, I think one of the channels here does a dual screen where you get the ball drop and the peach drop at the same time. You can watch them both. So we do that and have our champagne, and kiss each other. And then she goes back to bed and I watch, I love the fact that Turner Classic Movies does the three That's Entertainment movies, volumes 1, 2, and 3. And that's just chock full of great movie musical moments. That's fun to watch. I love the fact that I'm not sure what channel it is. I can't remember. What channel is it that shows the Marx Brothers movies? That's fun to tune into.
Isn't that Turner Classics that does the Marx Brothers?
No, Turner Classic. Nope, Turner Classic Movies does the That's Entertainment.
Okay.
So I'm not sure who does Marx Brothers, but I mean that's awesome. A local channel when I was growing up, channel TV 38 in Boston used to do the Three Stooges marathon that night. But I don't know if anybody still does that. So I've always liked watching lighter fare. So I don't know what I probably will tune into some Marx Brothers movies, because I think I'm feeling that a little bit more than the musicals. But certainly, that's what I'll be doing. I might even binge watch something on Netflix that night just to watch something. But yeah. And then I start every new year the same way. I sleep in. I wake up whenever I wake up. I have no alarm that goes off. So sometimes I start the new year bright and early, and other times might be more in the afternoon. I'm not interested really in the bowl games that much. I'm not interested in the parades. I'm sad to say. I mean, the Rose Parade was always kind of nice to look at, but I mean, if it's on, like if I'm up, I might have it on in the background, but it's not a destination. So,
of course, no, and that totally makes sense. Yeah, it's interesting, but you know, because. You know, a lot of times if I'm still awake, I'll watch the fireworks shoot off from the Space Needle at 3 a.m. here, because that's midnight on the West Coast. Mm. And I watched the feed from Seattle, and it's awesome watching them shoot the fireworks off from that. That's one of the things I miss from being out West and being able to, you know, see that. It's just like, it's just one of my favorite things of the year when I lived out there to see, because that was, for me, that was a tradition when I lived out there. We would go out somewhere to go watch the fireworks shoot off of it. If we go sometimes to Queen Anne Hill, or we'd go down by the water and watch it, or, you know, but the Space Needle, you know, because instead of the ball dropping, the elevator goes up, and when it hits, you know, as it's going up, fireworks are shooting off from the side of the Space Needle, and then when it hits the top of the Space Needle at midnight, it almost feels like the whole needle explodes in fireworks. It's really awesome.
Speaking of fireworks, one thing that's become a tradition with us as well is we have to make sure all our cats are in, because that is a night of fireworks for sure. And although it seems kind of cool to us humans, it feels like it's the Battle of the Bulge for the cat, like for any animals. They have no idea what's going on. They don't know what day it is. They don't have any concept that we're celebrating anything. All they know is that the world is exploding around them. And so, yeah, if you have pets, make sure that they are safely indoors. And yeah, I've never been one that really gets off on scaring animals. So, I some people find it amusing, but I do not. And I think that That's one thing we definitely have to make sure. Some of our kids usher in the new year underneath the bed and underneath the sofa.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Agreed. You know, here, you know, actually more than other places I've lived in the past, people love shooting out fireworks.
Yeah. And they don't seem like they don't even need a reason sometimes.
No, exactly. And it's just craziness. And it's just like, guys, stop it. You know, it does freak the dogs out. And it's just like, it's just not cool for the pets. And, you know, it's cool for the, like the first maybe 20 minutes after like 4th of July or for New Year's when they at midnight shoot off fireworks for a couple minutes. All right, now go to bed. 3 o'clock in the morning, stop already. You know, it just gets old. The one thing here this year, I know in Georgia, is it's going to be rainy for New Year's Eve this year.
Yeah, I won't stop the fireworks.
But no, of course not. No, God forbid.
But that gives us just add an incentive to just stay in and just usher the new year in quietly.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've had a couple invites to go to people's parties and stuff, so we'll see. I don't know what we'll be doing this year for us, but it should be interesting. But, you know, the one good thing is a fresh start for 2019. You know, positive, good things going to happen for all of us, for you, my friend, for all our listeners out there. And that's the great thing about, you know, fresh starts. You never know what's going to happen. And, you know, hopefully good things will come for 2019. And that's all the best we can hope for.
Absolutely. I wish nothing but the best for everybody next year.
Mm-hmm. We definitely would love to hear what your traditions are at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. We definitely would love to hear some of these. And, you know, definitely, you know, give us some ideas. What should we be doing for New Year? Should we be recording a podcast right at midnight saying, you know, half the show is in 2018, the rest of it's in 2019? No, we're not that corny. Sorry. I won't even go there. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And the great thing about, you know, ideas and traditions, each person has their own, and something we might not do, you might love doing. And, you know, people sometimes do fresh starts and, you know, make massive changes. And, you know, that's a great thing to do. And if that's what you are into, please, you know, we love hearing this and, you know, wish you the best for it. So please write us. Let us know. Let's take a quick break. We got the Geek Seat right ahead of us. See you in a sec.
Oh, yeah.
You ever been curious about the real or fictional worlds?
In the beginning, there were laser kings and giant robots.
Those who create.
I'm going to feed you to this tentacle monster now. No.
Or what inspires.
And I remember being in my room with my brother, and we immediately, like within 5 seconds, he decided he was a DC fan, and I decided I was a Marvel fan, and we were going through and sorting out all of the comics.
And you might enjoy Hubie Tigers, the only podcast show where we take life by the tail. Now available on Google Play, Stitcher, and iTunes, and of course, your favorite podcasting app. This is Hubie Tigers.
Hitchhike bus or yellow cabin?
Cabin?
Moving right along. Footloose and fancy free.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Network Geek Seat segment. And our victim guest / whatever you want to call it this week is Bo Brown. Welcome, sir.
Greetings, friends.
Welcome to the station. We're so glad to have you with us. For those people who may not be familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself, sir.
My name is Bo Brown, and I do a little bit of the puppet stuff here in Atlanta. I work at the Center for Puppetry Arts, and I am the puppetry track director at Dragon Con.
I was going to say a little bit is an understatement of the year so far. And we're almost done with the year. But yes, it's a great thing you do. The puppetry track, by the way, at Dragon Con has just been exploding. Like, that's less than 5 years old, isn't it?
No, it is. I think we're about 8 years now.
Really? Well, that goes to show you how much. Yeah, time has passed.
Really powering away. It's been, we've had some excellent luck with the guests that we've been able to bring, thanks to some of my connections in the industry, and we have done very well in a very short amount of time.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. So. I mean, not to dismiss any of the tracks at Dragon Con.
Of course not.
The puppetry track is a main attraction for sure. And you are mainly responsible for that. So thank you for that. Sort of tying in to that, we wanted to really have you on because of this campaign that's going on right now with about a week to go right now. And you've got some exciting things that you have planned for the Center for Puppetry Arts.
That's true. I've been working on this particular project actually for about 3 years. And it is finally happening. I'm very proud of it, and I'm really hoping that we can just, you know, seal the deal and have it all come together, because I truly believe that Mystery Science Theater 3000 is one of the most important modern puppet television shows of modern times, and they deserve, you know, I said it. I was like, they belong in a museum. They belong in our museum. Mm-hmm. And I decided to make it one of my personal missions to make that happen. And it took me 3 years to finally get inside to meet Joel and, broach the idea to him. And thankfully, he was all about it. He's very excited about it, and he has been amazingly supportive of us ever since I was able to get a hold of him and talk to him about it. And so here we are in the midst of the last week of the fundraising campaign to get Tom and Crow inducted. It's like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, it's right. Getting Tom and Crow inducted into the Worlds of Puppetry Museum. Okay. It's a big deal for us at the center. It's a big deal for Joel. I think it really validates Joel's work and his legacy. And it's something that I think is really important, and I want to see it finished off and bring those bots to their permanent home here in Atlanta, Georgia.
That would be awesome. That would be amazing. And I think it is telling. Most people probably, when they think of MST3K, they think of, oh, that's a show that makes fun of like old, you know, movies and that kind of thing. But really I think that's the skill of the puppetry that's involved there, is that you don't even like consciously think of them as puppets.
Right. People don't think about the show as a puppet show, but it's totally been a puppet show the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But you don't think about it as such. So we're having an unveiling event. We will unveil the bots in the museum on January 20th. If we succeed in our fundraising goal, Joel will be there, and Joel will do a presentation called The Puppetry of a Mystery 3K. And it's a presentation that he did a version of at Dragon Con. He's very excited about it because everyone always asks about the movies. Everyone always asks about the riffs. And Joel was a puppeteer and is a puppeteer, and he built the bots, and nobody ever asks him about the puppetry. And so he does this whole presentation about how he got involved in puppetry, which was through ventriloquism, which I had no idea of and is fascinating. And the whole idea of doing the bots was the silhouettes. He had this idea. He was a ventriloquist. He was interested in puppetry. He had the idea of doing the riffing the movies idea, but he realized that three silhouettes of white guys in the frame was boring.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was by making those two other characters puppets made the show more visually interesting. and it was a masterstroke. It was genius. And it is, I think, a huge part of the longevity of the show. It's allowed different actors, voice actors, to come in and play Tom and Crow over the years, you know. And it's exactly that. It's not just three guys, silhouettes, talking back at movies. It's the bots and the host, and it was brilliant.
And the design of them is brilliant too. I mean, you just look at them and they're like a hodgepodge of everyday objects just put together in a way that becomes animated and becomes its own thing.
And now they're instantly iconic. You see that silhouette.
Yep.
It's, you immediately know that that's Tom. You immediately know that that's Crow, you know? And it's cool because when they actually shoot the show to do the silhouettes, Tom Servo's globe is painted all black.
Oh, right, because it would be, yeah, because you would otherwise, yeah, you wouldn't see it.
It's
right?
Awesome. We got to see that when we saw the live show. He invited all my Dragon Con folks to come see the live show the first time it was through town, and I got to go backstage and see how they do the show and see how they do the riffs and how the bots are set up, and it was awesome. And I just have to say that through this entire process, you know, I've worked with lots of cool puppet people, you know, over the years, thanks to the track and everything. And Joel is definitely one of my favorite people I've ever worked with. He's kind, he's generous. He really, you know, of all the people, you know, in this world, the fans have really, you know, the fans saved the show. You know, there's no bones about it. The fans saved the show. And he really, truly appreciates that. And when I watch him interact with fans, there's a realness to that and an actual gratitude that I find really refreshing and warm and kind. This year he asked for Dragon Con, he said, "Hey, listen, man, we've got I want to put the bots in the parade. We're going to be in the parade in a convertible. So I'll be in the parade. And then we need two puppeteers to puppeteer Tom and Crow. Do you have two local puppeteers that could, you know, puppeteer Tom and Crow?"
Wow.
And I read that email and I was like, me? Yeah, me. This is it. This is like, it was one of those moments where all the hard work of Dragon Con gives you this golden moment of opportunity to live the dream. And I said, well, yeah, I think I could probably do that. I could do it.
So did you just do one?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I'm good. I'm not that good. I couldn't do both.
So which one was your choice?
I picked Crow.
Your spot of choice.
I picked Crow. Oh, okay, cool. So I rode in the front seat of the convertible, and then my colleague Aretta Baumgartner, who is a huge MST3K fan, and this is my big shout out to Aretta. I love you, Aretta. She got to puppeteer Crow, Tom Servo. And so she was in the car doing Tom Servo. I was doing Crow. Joel was sitting in his MST3K bomber jacket on the back, you know, on the back seat of the, you know, not in the seat, but up on the back of the convertible, waving to everybody and talking to everybody. And I got to be Crow. And it was probably the greatest day of my geek life. That's awesome. Puppet geek and as a geek, being puppeteering Crow, I was on cloud nine the entire rest of the day. Like, you know, Dragon Con's bonkers. Things happen, you know, bad things happen. That day was perfect. That was one of the most perfect days I've ever lived in my life because I puppeteered Crow T Robot. Like, that was insane to me. I grew up watching MST3K. I grew up watching it on Comedy Central, you know, like it's not the Muppet Show. It's you know, all those other things and the Henson Legacy and all that, you know, that's a huge part of what I do. But as a geek, MST3K is like Monty Python, you know, it has a place in our pantheon of geekdom, I think. And as a puppeteering Crow was one of the best days of my life. Period. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Period. And I think that's a great segue because I think you just answered the first question in the geek seat.
I think I did. I think I put myself in the geek seat.
I think he's already there, Mike. He's already answering questions. We don't even have, this is
easy. Come on, guys. Oh, you're just making this too easy for us. You know, I like it.
I can make it hard. Let's do it.
All right.
Change it up.
Well, now we got to take it down.
All right.
Let's bring it down.
Well, if you're ready, you know, we can get started with, you know.
No, we can. No, I mean, I want to encourage everyone to donate to the campaign. Obviously, we're over halfway to our goal. And because we paired it with Power to Give through the City of Atlanta, every gift you make is matched by City of Atlanta. So if you want to donate $50, that $50 donation becomes $100. Yeah. So for all of you listening out there, please, please, please donate. This is what's going to help us bring Tom Servo and Crow permanently to Atlanta. We will have them forever. They will live in Atlanta. And, you know, we've had some conversations with the bots, and they're, you know, they're okay with being put in, you know, cryogenic stasis for an indefinite amount of time. They get it. They've been through a lot.
They're ready to retire.
Yeah. You know, it's part of the job. But the other thing we're doing is we're auctioning off a golden Tom Servo signed by the cast of the new show. All the puppeteers, signed by Joel, signed by Felicia Day. You know, it's signed by everybody's totally beautiful gold Tom Servo. It's currently up for auction. The current bid, as far as I checked a couple days ago, was $900. And you know what? I just got to say, as an Atlanta geek, I would love for the Golden Tom Servo to stay in Atlanta.
I think we can do better.
I would love for him to stay here. So currently, I think the highest bid is like out in Minneapolis or somewhere. I would love for some local Atlanta geeks to step up and keep Golden Tom Servo here in town. And you know, in spite of the, you know, talking about back about Dragon Con again this year. Having Joel ask me, you know, or getting the chance to puppeteer Crow. Also on that day, he was like, "Oh, and you know, and Joel's great. He's so unassuming. He's so gentle. He was like, "Oh, yeah, boy, yeah." So you know, I have this golden Tom Servo, and the whole cast signed it, and we just wanted to, you know, give it to you for the campaign. And then, like, he hands me this cardboard box. This giant cardboard box that has this golden Tom Servo in it, signed by the cast, and I'm just like dumbfounded. I can't, you know, I'm trying to make words with my mouth, but it's not working out. And so there it is. We have it. It's sitting in my museum director's office at the Center for Puppeteer Arts, waiting for, I hope, the Atlanta fan to bring it home. Nice. So please go to the fundraising page, go to the auction site. Spend that money. Spend that money on Golden Tom Servo. Keep him in Atlanta.
Yeah.
I want to see him. I want someone to bring him to the unveiling. I want the person who gets the Golden Tom Servo to bring him to the unveiling and post for pictures with Joel. That's what I want.
Absolutely. And we definitely will have show notes, the links to all that in our show notes. But it's very cool. Mike, do you want to get with the second question since he's already answered the first question?
Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, you guys are doing my job for me, so you can keep going if you want. I'll just sit back here and smoke.
No. Yeah, I think we are safe to continue on.
Okay, if you say so. All right, Bo, what was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Disappointing.
Other than being on the podcast here. Yeah.
No, I love doing the podcast. I mean, come on, getting to talk about things I'm passionate about as a geek.
Good point.
He's so reserved, Mike. He's so, you know, it's just so hard to pull the passion out of him.
I know. The yeah, slow energy interview. I don't know what we're going to do with it.
I got to say, when I was a kid, going to the live-action He-Man movie, because I'm a huge He-Man geek. That's one of my other geeks. You know, my geek properties is He-Man. And seeing the live-action movie in theaters and being, as a child, utterly devastated as, you know, pretty much how little He-Man there was in the entire movie and everything that I loved about He-Man, I got to say, that was probably the most disappointing moment. A live action He-Man movie.
Fair enough.
Definitely. The less said about that one, the better.
Now, no, I disagree. As an adult, Frank Langella's performance as Skeletor is a masterpiece. There's a lot of there. I have a lot of bad things to say about that movie. But if there's one thing I can't say about it, was that Frank Langella phoned that performance in. That movie is absolutely worth watching to see Frank Langella play Skeletor. It is one of his best parts of his entire career, and he is still incredibly proud of what he did because his kid was a He-Man fan, and every single moment that Skeletor is on screen, that movie's awesome. But then there's the whole rest of the movie that's not good. But every time Frank Langella is on screen, Skeletor is on screen, it's pretty awesome. So disappointing as a kid, but I've come to appreciate it as an adult.
Okay. What geeks you out the most?
He-Man's my main fandom. I love He-Man. I have to say, after a big long drought of He-Man, watching the new She-Ra series on Netflix has been really great. It's really, you know, having new He-Man. There's new He-Man. It's She-Ra, and it's awesome, and it's Netflix, and it's great. So that's probably been, I mean, He-Man's my main fandom, and getting to watch She-Ra new and for a, you know, a modern audience, and I think the excellent way that they've adapted it has been really great lately. Maybe that's not like the most, I mean, He-Man geeks me out the most, but the way I've been able to enjoy my geekdom the most lately has definitely been the new She-Ra show.
Sure. No, totally understand that. What turns your geek off though?
Ooh. I've been going to Dragon Con for a long time. I've been going since I was 16 years old, and I've never missed a year. It doesn't happen very often, but every now and then someone will shut someone else's geek down. In my presence. And to me, that's the most un-Dragon Con, un-geek thing to do. And that really, that's what shuts me down and makes me angry. I cannot tolerate somebody trying to out-geek somebody or saying that they don't belong there. You know, Dragon Con it's where we all belong.
Dragon Con should be all-inclusive.
Right. And so those moments when, and I guess that's the wrong answer, because that really turns my geek up to like 11, actually, because I get really defensive and angry.
But still turns it off. It makes your stomach go, you know.
It does. It makes me very angry. And I've had some moments. I've had some times where I've had to step up to some people and be like, look, man, that's not what this place is about. You got to take it somewhere else. And especially as a track director, you know, you have to have that conversation with your volunteers to be like, look, if you see this kind of behavior, we don't tolerate it, period. That's what turns me off, is seeing other people try to tell other people that they're not geeking right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what turns my geek off and makes, you know, and going back to the She-Ra show, it's tough being part of a fandom when a lot of people in the fandom don't get it or have a different opinion. Maybe, you know, I can only speak to my opinion, but there are definitely people. And I think that the Star Wars community is probably the most visual, the most, you know, has a spotlight on them with this situation right now, with people saying that other people aren't allowed to enjoy it. And I think that, yeah, that's the worst. So the online He-Man fandom's response to the new She-Ra show, which I absolutely loved, was ugly. And it wasn't cool, and it was bad, and it made me ashamed to be a He-Man fan. And I was really sorry to see that. I was ashamed about being a He-Man fan. Okay. And that's not good. And I think there's probably a lot of Star Wars fans out there that felt the same way when, you know, they saw the things that the Star Wars fans were saying.
No, totally understand that completely.
Yeah. That turns my geek off.
What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Ooh. Well, I mean, I guess any doctor.
Okay.
Because usually that means something amazing is about to happen. I'll take the doctor.
Who's your doctor?
The doctor's my doctor. I am a fan of the story and the franchise. Cool. I find things to like in all the doctors.
Great answer. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
I don't know. That's tough. Because maybe it's the same answer with the doctor. Because, you know, yes, something is amazing about to happen, but a lot of people are about to die. Kind of comes sort of with that.
Yeah.
I would not want to meet the master. Both categories. That sounds terrible. I would not want to meet the master in any incarnation. There's no way that situation works out good.
Mm-mm, not for anybody.
No.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
By the power of Grayskull.
I could have seen that one coming. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Well, I've got a pretty good one. I mean, I get to sell the Muppets. I mean, that's pretty awesome. Working at the center has given me a great deal of intellectual properties. Labyrinth, Dark Crystal, you know, the Dark Crystal ball and the Labyrinth ball were my ideas. So having access to those IPs and being a fan has given me insight into how to create these types of events. Because I know what fans like, and I know that fans can smell. There's a word I would use, but I'm not going to use it. I'll say unauthenticity a mile away.
Okay, yeah, totally understand that.
So being able to create fandom experiences is my ideal geek occupation. And I get to do some of that. I get to do it at the center, and I get to do it at Dragon Con as the puppetry director. But I do think that there's maybe a bigger job maybe out there somewhere for me that can use my knowledge, you know, my specific knowledge of the properties that I am passionate about, and my ability to create events. I want to create events that people can just geek, that they just walk around the entire time being like, oh my God, and oh my God, and oh my God, it's a thing. Like, you know, just nailing it, nailing how perfect, giving that geek every, like when they see that thing, they're like, oh my God, you did the thing. That's the moment that I want my job to be that. I want that my job to be seeing that geek flip their lid over that thing that I did and have them be like, oh my God, you got it perfect. That's the ideal occupation.
That's awesome. That is really awesome. What geek occupation would you not like to do though?
Customer service.
Wow. That didn't take long at all.
Technical support. I got two. I don't want to deal with the details. I'm a macro guy.
I can understand that. All right, Bo, you kind of answered this next question in some of your answers already, but what is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Well, I've actually been really lucky. When I turned 30, and I am 39 now, and I will turn 40 next year. When I turned 30, my wife and a very good friend, did BoCon for me, and we rented a ballroom at a hotel, and we built a convention, and everything at the convention was my favorite things. So like, imagine going to a convention And it's not like the convention's all about you, but the convention only has the things that you love the most, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
Right. So I've kind of already lived it. Now, I mean, it was all hand done and handmade, so there weren't like celebrities there or anything, but I think that having your own private convention where you get to invite all your friends and all the stuff that the convention is about is your favorite stuff is, I think, truly any geek's fantasy.
No, totally understand that. That does
all
sound
your friends
like it.
There celebrating things that you love. Like we did trivia and the trivia was all like, you know, the categories were He-Man and Doctor Who and da, 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 you know, all the stuff that are my favorite things. I think that's, if there's any geeks out there looking for a great idea for a big birthday party, like a 30, a 40, I highly recommend do the Yukon, you know, get some people who really love you to really invest in it. And that's it. I mean, that's the dream.
Of course. Wouldn't awesome. That sounds really amazing, actually.
Right?
Oh, I know. Wow. You know, I got to tell my wife about that one real soon. I like that idea.
So I'm bringing BoCon back next year because it's 40. Oh. BoCon 2.
BoCon 2, 2019. It'll be posted here on Earth Station 1, of course.
Heck yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You guys can come do the live feed.
We'd be glad to. That would be really awesome. Well, Bo, got great news for you, my friend. You've officially made it through the Geek Seat. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $60.08.
Wonderful. Thank you.
And I've already put that towards the campaign, sir.
Thank you very much. That is the best way to spend that money. Thank you. And I encourage everyone, please donate to the campaign. Your money will be matched. It only matches the tax deductible so of your donation. So if you get perks, so like the merch that you get in the perk levels isn't matched. So it's just the money that you're actually donating minus the cost of what it takes for us to give you the perks that's matched. But please, 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 please donate to the campaign. Power to give. City of Atlanta is going to match, you know, that money. And please donate or bid on the Golden Tom Servo. I think a lot of people are waiting on that auction, you know, for it to get hot at the last minute. But please, please do drive the money up. Take that Golden Servo home. And then please, please, please be local or be from far away. But bring it to the unveiling. Joel's going to be there. I'm so excited about having Joel there. I love every moment that I've ever shared in person with Joel has been truly a dream. So please, please, please. MST3K, I think, is you know, there isn't another puppet show that's been on 30 years running. It's actually had, you know, with it being on right now, it's had some of longer longevity than the Muppet Show. It's incredibly important. And people don't think about it as a puppet show, but it is. And I think that's why it's very important for Tom and Crow to be inducted in, you know, it's like being inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They're going to be there at the Center for Puppet Arts Museum and along with Kermit, right alongside Kermit and the Labyrinth Puppets and Dark Crystal Puppets and Sesame Street Puppets. I think that Tom and Crow deserve to be there. And I'm very, very proud of the work that I've done.
As well you should be, sir. And we are very proud to have you on and help support you.
I think we might have lost Bo.
Did we lose him?
Can you hear me?
No, yeah, we got there. He is.
Okay. There he is.
We lost you for a minute, but no. As I was saying,
dramatic. That was a dramatic pause.
That's what it was. Well, like I said, we are very proud to have you on the show, and good work. The good work that you're doing helps support that in any way we can. So it's been too long since we've had you back. So we'll have to have you back early next year as well.
Okay.
Share the campaign, and I'll have some exciting Puppetry Shack news to share probably a couple of months after January, I reckon.
Cool. If you want to come back up on the show and talk about it, please feel free.
Absolutely.
All right.
But check out the Center for Poetry Arts. See what we're doing. Come see the museum. It's a great value. If you're in town, you know, you can just come. You can just buy a ticket to the museum. Come see all the amazing puppets. Labyrinth puppets, Muppet puppets, Sesame Street puppets. If you haven't been, there's no reason for you of not to have been at this point. Seriously. It's awesome.
Yes. Agreed. Thank you, sir. And happy new year to you. And we'll hope to see you soon.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Y'all take care.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment where we talk all about Mary Poppins Returns.
Hello, everybody. Michelle here, Iconic Rock Talk Show Moment, and today it's a night, so to speak, at the Rock and Roll Museum. Play It Loud, Instruments of Rock and Roll, is the first major art museum exhibit dedicated to rock and roll instruments and rock stuff. It's going to be at the Metropolitan Museum of Art beginning next April. It's got more than 130 instruments dating back to the late 30s that belonged to Elvis, the Beatles, Metallica, St. Vincent, the Stones, other people. They're drawn from private collections, and most of them have never been seen outside of in a concert. They're going to have Clapton's Blackie Strat, Eddie Van Halen's Frankenstrat, which is the red one with the black and white stripes, Keith Emerson's keyboards, Keith Moon's drums, also posters, stage costumes, videos, lots of other good stuff. It'll be at the Met through next October, and then it's going to move to Cleveland to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum. And also, if you didn't catch the David Bowie Is touring exhibit, or you want to relive it, there's an augmented reality app that's going to be out next January 8th, which would have been Bowie's 72nd birthday. It's going to be available for Apple and Android. The AR version's coming first, the VR version to follow. It will let you check out hundreds of Bowie artifacts, lyric sheets, costumes, works of art, all kinds of Bowie memorabilia, 3D renderings, 360-degree detail, and it'll have an immersive audio soundtrack to go with it. The app also will have almost 60 things that were not in the original exhibit as a bonus. So be sure to clear some room on your phone. That's going to take up some space, and get ready to check that app out next January. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show Moment. The blog is iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com. If you want to find out more about these exhibits, check out the latest entry on the blog. Also, I will have an entry up soon with thoughts as we come to the end of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame fan vote period for inductions for next year. We will catch you next time.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret, all your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but now you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is click on the link on the top navigation of the ESO Network website or go to patreon.com/ESO Network. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
I honestly can't remember why we kept most of this stuff to begin with.
Don't you remember that kite?
We used to love flying that with Mother and Father.
Those days are long behind me.
That's why I live and breathe.
Mary.
Poppins, you came back.
You seem hardly to have aged at all.
Really? One never discusses a woman's age, Michael. Would have hoped I'd taught you better.
What brings you here after all this time?
Same thing that brought me the first time. I've come to look after the Banks children.
Us?
Oh, yes, you too.
We're about to lose our home. Everything's fallen to pieces since your mother.
I miss Mother.
Nothing's gone forever.
good thing you come along when you did, Mary Poppins.
How'd you do that?
Do what?
So you've been off filling the children's heads with stuff and nonsense.
You've forgotten what it's like to be a child.
Everything is possible.
Even the impossible.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Earth Station One podcast. That's right, folks. It is now time to go back to the movies, and we got our crew here with us. We are going to be talking all about Mary Poppins Returns.
Yes, we will. And this is a sequel that's been over 50 years in the making. So quite a lot of expectations on this. And we've got our usual crew, but it's been a while since it's been the four of us. Ashley, of course, is here.
Hello, it's nice to be back together for, I think, the kind of the last big movie of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And although it hasn't been quite 50 years, Alex Autry returns.
Yeah, leave it to Disney to sit there and go, oh, you guys waited 14 years for the Incredibles sequel? Here's 50.
You think that was a long time. So let's get right to it. Let's start with what were your expectations were going in, and whether or not the film overall lived up to that. Ashley?
Well, sure. I was looking forward to this. Mary Poppins is a movie that I watched as a kid and really enjoyed. It's actually been a long time since I've seen the movie version, although I have seen the stage play version a couple times more recently. And I actually decided not to rewatch the original before it because I didn't want to like be thinking, comparing the whole time I was watching it. So I decided to just go in a little bit fresh, and I ended up really enjoying it. It's a fun, kind of lighter holiday film, just kind of one of those feel good movies. So I enjoyed watching it, and curious to see what others thought of it as well.
Yeah. It's interesting you mention that. I showed Michelle the original, because she had never seen it before. So we watched it the week before we saw Mary Poppins Returns. So we saw it last week, and that was the first time I'd seen it in a long time as well. And even though I was quite familiar with it as a child, it had been a long time since I'd actually watched the movie start to finish. And yeah, it's a pretty incredible film. And so, that did have my expectations in it, but I was really, I was thankful that I was reminded of all that stuff, because in the sequel, there's a lot that plays off the original, where I think
if
you haven't seen it ever, I don't know if the movie holds up, but, you know, I think so, but I'm not sure. But Alex, what about you?
I'm still getting over the fact that somebody hadn't seen the original. I'm not going to lie. That's throwing me off a little bit.
I was surprised too.
I'm actually surprised seeing on Facebook how many people haven't seen the original.
Yeah. Facebook is a very weird place. Here's the thing for me, with this film, this year for me has been the year where I've just kind of been over it with big films. This is the year where I've just kind of gone, okay, we've seen the stuff exploding before this year. We've seen it all. So let's give us a movie that's a sequel 54 years or something after the original that's just wholesome and entertaining. And I think that's what I liked most about it. And a refreshing change from the everything explodey thing. And I'd appreciate it if y'all don't remind me of this when we do the Star Wars one next year. And I'm like, oh, it was so cool because all the explodeys.
Mum is the word. Mum's the word.
I know. This is so coming back to bite me.
Because when have we ever harped on anything you've said?
Oh, never.
So, let's go to the tape right now.
Let's not say we didn't. No, so I think if there was ever a movie that was released at the right time, I think it's this one. I think this one needed to be released right at the Christmas season, and just was an opportunity to be a good, fun family movie.
Mike, what about you?
You guys pretty much said it already. This was perfectly timed. It was a great time to take a breather right before the new year. And, you know, this was our Christmas movie for me. And we, you know, had a blast going to see it. And it was, you know, after seeing superhero movie, superhero movie, superhero movie, you know, action adventure all year long, it was actually nice to actually see this movie and, you know, be able to feel like a kid again watching it. And, you know, seeing characters that were familiar but new at the same time, and finding the Disney magic and bringing it, you know, into what I was hoping it would be. I was a little, there are parts of it I will say I was disappointed with, but overall, you know, it was great and it took me out of reality for almost 2 hours, and that's what I needed. So, and I think that's what a lot of people needed right now.
I think, yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, I think this definitely does. It's amazing to me. I mean, especially since seeing the original just a week before, rewatching the original, having it so fresh, and then watching this. This is, there's not a lot that they changed as far as the formula. They didn't update it. You know, they didn't make Mary Poppins edgy. It could have been done like a year after Mary Poppins. It could have been done like 10 years or whatever. It's like, it doesn't feel like a 50-year-old sequel. It feels like it fits in almost perfectly, practically perfect with the original, in a sense that it's done respectfully. I mean, yes, Disney is can be accused of cash grabs, especially when you look at their schedule next year, and they've got live action versions of Dumbo, The Lion King, quote unquote live action. It's really just CG animation, and Aladdin on the way, plus Incredibles 4, and not to mention, you know, Avengers and Star Wars. They're not going to have a problem, you know, making money next year. But this didn't, with all the things that they're doing as far as, you know, remaking or making live action versions of the animated movies and retelling the same old story, this didn't feel like that. It felt like this is something new, but also really ties into the old. I don't pretend to know what the great Walt Disney ever thought in his head, because he was a brilliant man. I'm not saying he was perfect, but he was, in my opinion, he was one of the most brilliant men. And I came out of this thinking, I think he would be really happy with this film.
Oh, I think so too. It really felt like it was a love letter to the original without looking off of it. It just felt like their people spent time. They really cared about the original and like, let's return to this. Let's give people that same feeling. So I was really impressed with that. Like you said, it did not feel like a quote unquote cash grab to me at all. People really put their heart and soul into this, I think.
So let's talk about Mary Poppins herself. You know, she's the main character, of course. And Julie Andrews leaves a huge impression. As I think she got the Oscar, she got all the awards. It was her motion picture debut back in 64. And yet she won everybody over, even P.L. Travers, who was pretty much not happy with anything else in the movie. But she did like Julie Andrews. And I do remember seeing a story that when they started doing Mary Poppins on Broadway, or you know, the theatrical version of the musical, Julie Andrews attended one of the performances and actually made a like sort of a speech or whatever at the end. And she said that she was really grateful that Mary Poppins was being brought to the stage and that other actresses were playing Mary Poppins, because finally, like, the weight was off her shoulder of being like the only one to have played this character. And I do find that interesting that she sort of like the torch has been passed, right? I mean, she doesn't appear in this. She's too busy being an Aquaman.
Yes.
So, she's in the theater next door. No. Like, and I almost thought, now I know at the top of the show we said spoilers, so I just want to remind everybody that we are going to spoil the movie here as we discuss it. You know, there are two surprise cast members in this movie. The second of which is Angela Lansbury, who did not appear in Mary Poppins and yet seems perfectly at home with this one. But you almost feel like, oh, I wonder if that part was originally written to be Julie Andrews. And I'm so glad that it wasn't. Now, I don't think it was written for her. I mean, Julie Andrews cannot, my understanding is she cannot sing anymore. So I don't think they would have had her do a song, like an actual number. But even though Dick Van Dyke appears in this movie, I appreciate the fact that I don't think there's any way you could have had Julie Andrews do a cameo or anything like that, because it would have taken away from Emily.
Yeah. One of the things, and again, you have to understand when it comes to just how much of a weight was on the shoulders of Julie Andrews. Walt himself went to her and said, "We want you to be Mary Poppins for our new movie that we're making." And she's like, "I can't, I'm pregnant." And he went, "We'll wait." Now, they've pretty much decided who's playing the role and who's going to be the character if they're willing to wait for someone to have the baby. So she's had this for a long time, and I think she actually still can sing. She did a performance in Princess Diaries 2, the Royal Wedding one. But I don't think that she could sing very much anymore. And at this point, I think it's safe to say that those days are certainly over for her, which is a shame because, let's face it, she's brilliant.
Yeah, but that was also almost 10 years ago.
That's true. That was back before the princess decided to renounce her crown and become Catwoman. But I think Emily Blunt was given a good, solid script that stayed true to the original story and the original character of the story, and in the end was able to do right by the character. My biggest fear going in, before I had heard that that it was a different character, my honest fear was that Lin-Manuel Miranda was going to be playing Bert.
Mm.
Yeah, I was too. I was so glad to see that he was Jack.
That it was like 20 years
later. Yeah.
Yes.
Because I was like,
and that it was,
you know, because all of a sudden, because, and again, how many times has Mary Poppins been in a town where everybody, you know, every street urchin character knows who Mary Poppins is?
Well, everybody knows
who Mary Poppins is. Well, I realize that, but, you know, same.
I don't know how often she comes down from the cloud, and I don't know if she's specifically just handles the Banks children. Because that's the only times that we've seen her anyway. That's the only time it's been documented.
Yeah, that's well. I mean, again, it's the Banks telling of it. It's a lot like Tony Stark making himself sound better in Incredibles 3. Or no, I'm sorry, Iron Man 3, not Incredibles. That would be a mistake.
Right, so. That would be, which I've made. So Emily Blunt, what did we think? Did she come close? Did she make it her own? Ashley, what do you think about Emily's performance? I haven't really seen Emily in a lot, so this is really like, she was in that Tom Cruise movie, right? Where they go back in time over and over.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
I think that's like the only other thing I've seen her in.
I have seen her in a number of things. She was really great in A Quiet Place as well. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen that one, that's another one I really recommend. I really enjoyed seeing her in this. I thought she found a nice balance between kind of hearkening back to the previous movie, but also kind of doing her own thing. When you're following such an iconic performance, you don't want to be just, oh, I'm just parodying Julie Andrews and just kind of trying to play exactly as she did. I thought she did a good job of capturing kind of the essence of the character, but also giving her own little spin to it. And I thought it just all flowed very nicely together. And like you guys said, I think it was a good idea to set it later in the future to have some new characters. And that kind of helps everybody just buy into it a little bit more. This is not the same Mary Poppins, but it's kind of along that same line. So I thought she did a good job kind of finding that balance. And I really enjoyed seeing her and seeing her do the song and dance numbers too.
Emily is sort of a chameleon when she goes on, when she goes into a movie. When Glenn Close does a role, I look at it, it's like, oh, it's Glenn Close as this, or, you know, Glenn Close as that. Emily, you've had her in Edge of Tomorrow as Rita, as this hard-nosed soldier. And in the same year, she was the baker's wife in Into the Woods. She did voice work for the My Little Pony movie, as well as A Quiet Place. And she was Juliet in Romeo and Juliet.
That's quite a variety.
I'm actually ashamed that I knew that one.
That's why we have you on the podcast, Alex.
Also proof that Jason Statham can do a Disney movie, because he's in Romeo and Juliet too.
We'll see about that. that remains to be seen.
It's already happened. So, but yeah, I think one of the great things about her is that when she's performing, it's not, we don't see Emily Blunt. You don't look at her and go, oh, there's Emily Blunt. You see her get into the role, and yes, she did it her way, but it's still recognizable as to the character of Mary Poppins.
I felt a little bit that she was a little cold compared to like Julie Andrews or some of the actresses I've seen like do the play.
Well, but a lot of that may have come from the adaptation from the book, because of course this is taking from the idea of the Mary Poppins Returns was part of a throwback to the book of Mary Poppins Comes Back. And in the books, Mary Poppins is a lot closer to Nanny McPhee than she is to Winnie the Pooh.
My understanding is, I've never read the books, but my understanding is she is no nonsense.
She's a bit of a badass.
Yeah. And I did get that impression from her when the movie started. I thought, ooh, this is more of a Mary Poppins like from the books than maybe the last movie. But then at some point she kind of we see her talk like to the children kind of sternly, and then they go off and do something, and then the camera cuts back to her and she kind of smiles as if to say, like, no, I'm still Mary Poppins. Like, I'm coming across as like kind of rough, but I'm still, it's for their own good. And I was like, and after that, there was a couple scenes, and only a couple, where I thought, ooh, I think she's trying to mimic Julie instead of doing it her own way. But by, I would say, the second act, I was all in. I thought she was, I just looked at her and I said, she's Mary Poppins. The only thing I think that maybe took me out of it, and I was like, ooh, I don't know if Julie would do this, was the book cover number.
Yes.
Because I thought that was a little raunchy. And I was like, well, that net wouldn't have been done in the 60s. I don't want to say it doesn't belong here, but it's full of double entendres.
Very much so. Judy looked at me and was like, did she just say that?
Did they mean it like that?
That was, yeah, because I think it was really important in the original. And I think Walt and the rest of them were really, it was really important to them not to sexualize Julie Andrews, but not to sexualize Mary Poppins as a character. That's why there's no, even though she kind of flirts with Bert, there's not a love story.
Right, but we do also have that entire rap sequence, because as we all know, Dick Van Dyke, inventor of rap music, does that whole rundown of all the different women.
Yes.
And he goes, and then there's Mary Poppins, and that's where we stop. And yeah. It's kind of like, okay, so, you know, that in itself could easily have been a double entendre, because it's like, we got to Mary Poppins, didn't need any more.
Yeah, there's a, like I said, there's a little bit of flirtation, but nothing as overt as that number in this
one.
I like the number. I don't know that I would have kept it in there, but I didn't mind it. I just was kind of, I don't know, maybe that's just, you know, 50-year-old me going, I don't know if that's appropriate.
You kids got off my lawn.
But I do like, and here's a big difference in this movie. So again, the original movie and is got Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke, and they have such amazing chemistry. They are when I say they're the stars of that movie, they own that movie. And all the, even though there's animation and a lot of effects and everything like that, the real magic in that movie is them. If you don't have them in that movie, then I don't think that movie is, I don't think we're talking about it now. So here, even though it's not even though the original, it's not a love story, here they sort of cut that right off by saying, no, Mary Poppins is her own thing. And Jack is going to be set up with Jane, and they're the love story here. So don't get any ideas that, you know, Mary Poppins is going to be, you know, like kind of looking at Jack at all and flirting with him at all. That's not what's going to happen here. So there's a hugely different dynamic here between the two main characters, I think.
No, agreed. And I'm glad, you know, they had the thing with, you know, the Banks children and how Jack, when he was a little kid, used to wave up to Jane. And, you know, it was cute. And I'm glad they played on that a little bit more. There were scenes in this movie that felt like it was like almost step for step out of the first one.
Oh yeah, the whole like structure of the movie
is exactly
the same as the structure of the
well, movie. Exactly. You know, when you get to the whole story with the bowl, and you know, the whole animated there, then you had them go into Diagon Alley where they went to the upside down house.
Yep.
And you know, that's from the first movie, I'd Like to Laugh, you know, and everything. And then going to the bank, it was literally step by step by step by step.
Yep.
But it still worked in so many different ways.
I also found it interesting in the first movie is really about, you know, Mr. Banks and how he's not paying attention to the children and all that. And then once he starts paying attention to the children, then, you know, Mary Poppins can leave. But there's no mention, even though it seems like the mother is just as negligent as the father, it doesn't seem like she's important at all to the plot of that movie. And here they just eliminate the mother. Like, she's dead, so you don't have to worry about it. So, once again,
that does make her kind of a crucial plot point. She's generally crucial to the plot.
She's dead, and she's more of a plot point to this movie than the mother was in the first movie, even though she was
dead. Yeah, but the part of that falls on the writings of Travers, though. And one of the things I want to put this out there before we go too far into it. You had just said that you were that the original movie was definitely the Dick Van Dyke and Julie Andrews show, and that without them, it would be. I think for me, Mary Poppins, and I hate to use the phrase, but I'm going to. It is practically perfect in every way because of all the elements that go into it. Julie Andrews was perfect for that role, and the writing of the music was perfect for her. The animation style was perfect for the comedy of Dick Van Dyke. So it's this perfect storm of everything coming together. I think if you had had somebody different in those roles, you'd still have a classic film. Pete's Dragon, as an example, is a classic film. We don't talk about it as much, but it's still got that same people who've seen the movie tend to have a generally good feeling about it. In the same vein that they would Mary Poppins. With this one, all the things that they went into making sure were still there, the not so much the relationship between Mary Poppins and Jack, but the banter, the repartee between them, mm-hmm. Is still in the same vein as Van Dyke and Andrews, and the animation, which thankfully they maintained the 2D hand drawn.
Oh yes, that was wonderful.
Because Disney did not want to go that route. They did want to go full CGI on that.
They did,
and the director Marshall was adamant about making sure that it stayed 2D. And apparently, Disney said, "Fine, we'll just remake The Lion King."
wow!
We'll make our own CGI characters. No, they wanted.
There was plenty of CGI animation.
Yeah, they wanted to go. Oh, they wanted to go full computer animation on this one.
Yeah. Wow! So glad they stuck with the 2D because that was my favorite part. There's a lot of great computer animation out there. I love it. Pixar is doing great work, but I just miss sometimes that good old 2D animation. And it was so nice to see it again. I really love that part.
Well, it was interesting because for me, I loved the 2D, you know, animation also. And when I saw the penguins, my face lit up.
Oh, yes.
To see them back. But then I thought the movie went a little bit off the rails for me. In some point, well, that whole dance routine, like we were talking about earlier in the tent and everything, went a little bit too far. But then I almost was like completely taken out of the movie. The whole scene where the little boy was kidnapped and, you know, there had to be an action adventure scene where the bad guys stole the Banks family, you know, the furniture from the, you know, and started kidnapping the kids and, you know, and it was just like, Mary Poppins doesn't need that. It doesn't need that kind of thrill. And I know it's changing with the times and I'll probably sound like an old person here, but it just didn't need to be put in. The movie could have been great without it. And I know they were playing on the fears of the kids and everything because they're scared of losing their home. But I just didn't, the movie just didn't need it. It was just like, why did they have to even do that? It felt like, oh, all of a sudden I'm watching The Rescuers or something.
I hear you. First of all, I don't think it's that long. I think it's only really 5 minutes. But I also feel like I like the fact that the kids' fears had some weight to it. I thought it was fine, but I could see your point because it is sort of a different tone than the rest of the movie. Like, does Mary Poppins really need a bad villain? And for that matter, speaking of bad villains, I think one of my least favorite things in the movie is the character that Colin Firth plays, just because I'm like, there's no motivation for him at all. I mean, there's sort of this generic, like, I'm greedy motivation, but he seems specifically to want to see the Banks out of the house. And I'm like, what is it? Why does he have against them? It just doesn't, it seems to come out of nowhere, where just a couple of lines might have explained his like reason for doing things. So I thought that was that. I didn't like the first one doesn't really have a bad guy. It's just things happen. And I kind of like that element more. I wish that this movie didn't really have a bad guy. So
I kind of agree with that as well. I think that they didn't necessarily have to have a villain who was actively working against the family. They could have just gone with, this is an economic downturn. Lots of people are struggling. they're going to lose the house. Just because they're going to lose the house, no one's like extra villainous and trying to make extra sure that they don't get to keep it. I think it would have been fine if they were just kind of working against bad things that were happening to a lot of families. I don't think they necessarily needed to have the good old mustache twirling villain behind the scenes.
And really, it goes against the message of the film. Like, I'm confused as to what the message of this movie is, because it's like, oh, well, if you put your hopes and dreams and your imagination and things, then things will kind of work out for themselves. You don't really have to do anything, because nothing that they did really worked out for them. Like, if it wasn't for Dick Van Dyke coming in at the end, they would have lost their house. Like, that wasn't like there wasn't anything that they did to help that their situation. I mean, they tried everything they could, but ultimately they didn't get the job done, and neither did Mary Poppins. And I was kind of like, I was kind of confused as to what the whole like message was there. I mean, even though it was really, you know, the songs were great and everything, I thought the message could have been a little bit more in the hands of the actual characters. Does that make sense?
Yeah, oh, no, that totally makes sense. But and I agree with you. They had already accepted the fact that they lost the house. They moved out.
Oh, yeah. And they were leaving. They were like, yeah, you can have the house. We're out. We're leaving. And it wasn't until now. I am not going to suggest that Dick Van Dyke should not have been in this movie, because I mean, as soon as he appears, tears start coming down my eyes, and those were tears of joy. Dick Van Dyke can still light up a theater, and it's a shame that, you know, he hasn't been used more in the last 30 years. Like that was a great appearance, a great cameo. Like, I love how 50 years ago he, you know, had the makeup to play an old man. And in this one, it's like, it's like, nope, I'm pretty sure that the makeup kind of covers the fact that he's like older than in this guy.
They still made him look older. He's 93 years old. They still used makeup in the movie to make him look older, which is just crazy. Yeah, but if you look at the first movie, by that same token, let me rephrase this. One of the things that some of the Disney movies have done lately, especially the live action ones that are not remakes, have kind of given us this odd ending that doesn't quite feel like we've gotten. Like, I loved Christopher Robin.
Mm-hmm.
And the moral of Christopher Robin seems to be stuffed animals are real, and if you just look at things from an upside down perspective, suddenly you can change vacationers. And you kind of sit there and go, well, this was a lot of fun, as long as I don't overthink it. And I can see the argument regarding the lack of a need for a villain, but I think a lot of what we've gotten now in films is that there has to be an antagonist. The antagonist in a movie like this can't just be society in general, because that's when Twitter blows up.
yeah.
I also think that, you know, I think the music in this is great. I like the music a lot. Ultimately, when you're comparing it to the Sherman Brothers, I think it comes up a little short.
But
it's no, like that's the Sherman, you know, you're going up to against the Shermans, Sherman versus the Shermans. I don't know. It
seems yeah. Like,
yeah. But, that's not easy. So, the numbers are good. I think if I, you know, look, I had the Mary Poppins record when I was a kid. And so even though I only saw the movie, I think once in the theater, I had the record and I played it over and over again. So I knew those songs. Those songs are embedded in me in a level that, Like, I just heard these songs for the first time. So if I played these songs over and over again, they might be as great to me. I don't know. But at least in the first initial watch through, I wasn't coming out of there particularly humming a specific song of this. So I was a little disappointed that way. Not in a horrible way. The music didn't suck, but you know, when you've got this other movie to compare it to, or to fall in line with, every time I heard, and it didn't help that every time, like, the score would like bring up like Chim Chimney or Supercalifragilistic or something like that. Like, it would kind of like, you'd hear that kind of pop up here and there. Mm-hmm. In the score, and I was like, oh yeah, there's Mary Poppins music.
Yep.
I don't really see any of the music from this becoming as memorable as from the first movie.
Well, I mean, I've heard other people like say that that's not true. I've heard other people like really like some of the music. So, I mean, maybe that, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I might be just too harsh on it because I'm only hearing it once, you know. Maybe if I were to hear it over and over again, it would be different, but we'll see. I do think some of it has potential. Like I said, I thought it was good. I don't know if I would label it as great.
I just like the fact that the guy who wrote Blame Canada is now doing the music for Mary Poppins. Comparing the two artists, that's a big problem that this movie has, is that a 54-year period of time between sequels, you're going to wind up with a lot of unfair comparisons.
Sure. Well, even if it was made like the next year, you would have compared it. So
yes, but you also would have had the Sherman Brothers as part of the thing. You would have had the animation department that was already working on it. You would, okay, to be fair, back then you'd have just been reusing the same cells from the animation department. But you know, to have 50 years later, where we've had this 50-year period of time to make Mary Poppins the movie so iconic, and then turn around and go, let's compare the two apples to apples, shall we? Oh, it's not going to be the same. It's like comparing the works of Meatloaf to comparing the works of Amadeus.
But I'll go, Alex, I'll go a little further than that. Then I'm not just noting Mary Poppins.
Right.
I mean, yes, obviously it's a sequel, but mm-hmm. the thing is, this movie does bring back successfully that yes. feeling I had of Mary Poppins, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, all those great holiday, like musicals from the 60s that Disney was giving us, that I'm glad that this is like still exists. Like, somebody is bringing this back. But I just wish that the music had just been a little bit better. Like, because back then, and the Shermans were doing most of the music for a lot of that stuff, but others were too. But, I don't think, like, there's a big problem. Like last year, Moana was one of my favorite movies. And, like, maybe if they had, like, Lin-Manuel kind of, like, do one of the songs here, maybe Mary Poppins would have, like, actually wrote one of the songs, then maybe it would have been a little bit better. I don't know. I'm not saying he's the genius for everything, but I did like the music.
Why not? Everybody else says he's the genius for everything.
Well, and I did like the music. I will say I did like the music for Moana better than I like the music for this. So
I agree with that, actually, because I actually do own the soundtrack to Moana.
I do too.
I don't think I'll be purchasing the soundtrack to this.
I like the fact that Ashley didn't say that she owned a copy of it. So it's like, we're the three manly men who know all the words to all the music from Moana.
Hey, this is really embarrassing. I've actually not seen Moana. It's terrible. I know. I see it on Netflix and I'm like, I should watch that. I need to watch that. And then it's been like a couple years. So
you got time. Look,
add that to the bucket list.
It took, you know, 50 years for Michelle to watch Mary Poppins. So you've got, you know, you're okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be another 50 timer. Years until they do a sequel called Moana. Yeah,
so. Start the timer.
Maybe. All right. So let's do some, I guess, final thoughts on Mary Poppins Returns. Ashley, we'll start with you. Some final thoughts overall, maybe some things we didn't mention real quick, and your rating 1 through 5.
Oh, gotcha. Something I did want to mention is that we talked about him a little bit, but I did really enjoy Lin-Manuel Miranda in this movie. He just had like the big grin on his face the whole time. I love when you can tell that performers are really into it and they're really excited to be in the movie. And I really got that from him. So I enjoyed just seeing him have fun just playing this character.
That sequence where Dick Van Dyke is on the desk, and on one side of him is Emily Blunt, and on the other side is Lin-Manuel. The two of them cannot contain how, I mean, they're staying in character, sure, but their faces are just like, oh my God, this is an awesome moment. They are fanboying out right in that scene. And it's wonderful to watch.
I love that. Just like those little magical moments. I really appreciated the genuineness. I would say in terms of rating, I would give it a very solid 4 stars. I really enjoyed it. It was a fun movie. It was perfect. I saw it on Christmas Eve with my mom, and I think that's just a great way to see it at the holidays surrounded by family. It's a great family film and a nice little change of pace from some of the other big action-packed movies this year. So I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to renting it again when it comes out on home video.
Awesome. Alex?
At a time when you have Spider-Man's newest animated whatever, Bumblebee, Aquaman, all this stuff out there right in the smack dab middle of the Christmas and holiday season, along comes Mary Poppins Returns. And
all the testosterone?
It's not even counter-programming. It's just a fun time at the movies. And it's just a time when you don't have to sit there and go, wait, what just exploded now? I think if it had come out at any other time, probably would give it 3 stars. Give it at 4. I think it's just a really good time at the movies and could not have come out at a better time.
Awesome. Mike?
I had to think about that because I was talking to Judy about it and when we were walking out. And like you guys said, it was a good break from the testosterone. It was a great break from reality. It was a great feel-good movie. And it was, you know, I want to find balloons where I can go float up in the sky and such. I'm going to probably, though, give it a 3.5 just because I'm such a huge fan of the original, and comparing it to the original while watching this the whole time. Oh, this is the part where they do this. This is the part where they do that. I would have loved to seen, you know, other things. The actors were great. The cameos were awesome. You know, we got to see, you know, people like Meryl Streep singing. You got to see Colin Firth. You got to see Dick Van Dyke and Angela Lansbury and David Warner. Oh, David Warner was awesome.
He was awesome.
And so, yeah, it was great. So I'd probably do a 3. I'm going to change it. 3.75 because it's almost a 4 for me.
So it's practically perfect. And we did that.
Yeah. I'm going to, you know what? I'm going to round up to a 4 as well. Cause I'm probably more like a 3 point, I don't know, whatever. So I'm going to round up to a 4 because it does have that Disney. Like I said, I think Walt Disney would be like so proud of this. I think I think he's all over this. I think, you know, obviously you compare, etc. That's just going to be part of the deal here with all sequels. Right. But the performances are great. The musical numbers are good. I do think that even though the songs were not maybe as memorable, I thought the numbers were great. I thought, candlelighters numbers, is that what they're called? Lamplighters, right?
Lamplighters.
Was just as spectacular as the chimney sweeps number was in the first one. I mean, sure, it's reminiscent, but it just felt fun. Like after that number was over, I wanted to stand up and clap. I was watching it on Broadway or something. I thought it was great.
I was waiting to see, you know, like, wow, they invented the dirt bike back then. That's awesome.
Yes, they did. Mary Poppins invented the dirt bike.
It was right after Dick Van Dyke invented rap music.
So I definitely say I recommend it. Will I watch this again? I think I will. You know, I do intend, as much as I hate to have another subscription service like the Disney Plus thing, I don't know if I can say no to that, especially if it's going to open up the vaults, access to the vaults. So I'm sure that, you know, when I have the Disney Plus service, Mary Poppins Returns will be on that, and I'll probably be watching it a few times as well. So I think it's and yeah, Ashley, I think you said it perfectly, that this is a love letter to, for all its faults, it's a love letter to the original, and I think it does it a good service. So I'm all for it, so I'll give it a 4. So, well, awesome. Thanks so much for joining us for this last movie review of the year of 2018. I appreciate you guys joining us all year round, not just for this episode. Thanks, guys. And we look forward to, we've got a lot of movies already that we're scheduled to review next year. So I can't wait to get started on next year's films.
That's fantastic. We will see you guys in 2019. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Con Report.
Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jim, Cheree. A sweep is as lucky can be.
Welcome to Geek Girls Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about the Sabrina the Teenage Witch Christmas special. So, 'tis the season to watch all the Christmas specials, even though it's slightly after Christmas. So, of course, I had to check out the Sabrina the Teenage Witch Christmas special to see where in the timeline it took place and to see how the creators would handle this show as a Christmas special. Well, this Christmas special takes place after season one and all that happened in it, which to me was awesome. It gives fans the way to get ready for season two while also just getting more Sabrina, since the first season was kind of left on a weird note with so many unanswered questions. We get to see what happened to the little baby, how Sabrina is handling her human friends after signing the Book of the Devil and going to the different school, and how she's handling her family after all that happened in season one. We also get a small story around Susie, who has taken a job as one of Santa's elves and ends up being caught by a demon who wants to dip her in wax and add her to his collection of children that he has done this to for years. The side story of Sabrina wanting to talk to her mother so she has a seance, and then mischievous spirits getting into their house was also really equally great. And how they combined the two stories together really made this Christmas special work for me. And in my opinion, it was a really great Christmas special. I really love everything about this and how they have now set up for everyone to be ready for season two. That starts in April. The creators of this show seem to have it very well laid out. And if you have not watched season one or this Christmas special yet, you really, really should give it a try. It is very dark compared to the old Sabrina TV show from the 90s, but it has its own great qualities and it's just really, really awesome. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Chimney, chim, chimney, chim, chim, chiree. When you're with a sweep, you're in glad company.
Nowhere is there a more happier crew
than them what sings chim, chim, chiree.
For the week of December 31st, it is time for the ESO Network Con Report.
Howdy, everyone. Well, we've got three conventions right away, January and February, that you can find ESO Network folks at. The first of which is January 18th to the 21st. It is Aresia in Boston, Massachusetts. It is a sci-fi fantasy convention, and you will find the Flopcast crew. Kevin, in particular, will be there, and he will be on a couple of panels. So say howdy to our good friend Kevin, or whatever the equivalent of, I don't know what how chickens greet each other, but certainly you can ask him.
Maybe they cluck.
Maybe they cluck. Yes, maybe they do. Then the week after that, January 25th through the 27th, is ChattaCon, and that is in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Beautiful Chattanooga, Tennessee. The Vitamin Geeks, Corey will be there, and he'll be on a couple panels as well. So it's good to see ESO Network folks getting out there and contributing to conventions and being on panels and such. Great experiences for that, and good on them, because so it's a good way to meet some people from the network. And then in February, the second week of February, the 15th through the 17th, is Inuhele, and that is a tiki weekend in Atlanta, Georgia. You can find out all the information about that at atlantatikitour.com. I will be there with Tiki Zombie artist Peter Cutler. We will be there representing, of course, Tiki Zombie, but also representing Earth Station One. We'd love talking about the station no matter where we are. And we've got a lot more events happening throughout the year that you can find ESO Network folks at. These are just the first three. So stay tuned to this spot. And please, if you've got conventions that you want us to rave about, please let us know, because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us on the final show of 2018. Alex, thank you for returning to the show, my friend.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. And I apologize for missing the last few. I had an anniversary to go to. So my shout out is to my beautiful wife.
So. Oh, that's sweet. Congratulations, yeah. You two crazy kids.
Thank you. 15 years. So those of you who had the over at 11, you win.
And it's going to keep on going and going and going. Thanks to Dallas, Diamond Dallas Page.
Yep.
So, all right. And Ashley, you've been fantastic for all the movie reviews you've sat through, and even the extra credit you did with Mike.
Oh, thank you. I had a lot of fun doing the Little Better Late Than Never side series, and I always enjoy talking movies about with you guys. So it's always a blast.
Excellent. Anything you want to shout out about?
I just want to give a quick little shout out to the crew over at the Earth Station DC Cinematic Universe. I got to join them for their discussion about the annual CW crossover episode. So that was a lot of fun. I believe that episode should be coming out soon, but always enjoy chatting with them and visiting another part of the station.
It's always awesome. And Drew and Cletus are doing a fantastic job. Congratulations,
they're great.
Guys.
Yeah, it was fun. That's the second week in a row we've given them a shout out, because I did that last week, Ashley, since I was Bobby and I were on the show too, because Bobby was on the show last week too, so yeah, that was fun. But you know what, it still hasn't come out yet, so I guess I was a little premature when I gave him a shout out, because
I hate when that happens, that premature stuff.
At my age, I'm just lucky it happens.
All right, Mikey, what shout out do you got for tonight, sir?
I was thinking about it, and I'm just like, I'm just going to give a shout out to 2018. This is our last recording of the year. Next year, we're gonna put the year through the ringer, the good and the bad. So that's going to be fun to do. But this year, I just wanted to, since we're on the cusp of the New Year's, I just wanted to look back this year certainly had its shares of ups and downs. But overall, I want to just thank everybody who helped make it a great, great year, and everybody that I had great experiences with this year. And if you're listening to this thinking, was I one of those persons? You were. So I do appreciate that.
Okay, that's awesome, sir. My shout out actually goes to the person who just spoke, to Mr. Mike Gordon.
Oh,
I wanted to thank him for another amazing year with the podcast. And 2018 has been great for all of us here at the ESO Network, and especially here on Earth Station One. We've had a blast doing, a lot of great episodes, movie reviews, music. We've started integrating more into the show. We've, done more book reviews and still looking at science. We've had Darren on the show talking about LGBT stuff. And, you know, we just topics we love talking about. And, you know, Mike has been coming week after week after week after week. And it's just, you know, this has just been a fantastic adventure. I always look forward to finding out what's on his mind each week and talking with him. And I wanted to thank him. And, you know, it's been great, my friend.
Well, the feeling is mutual, sir. I love coming back every week and us producing a good, hopefully entertaining show.
Well, our numbers are out there, so you know, somebody has to be listening to it. So it's a plus, you know, and hopefully we didn't scare anyone away with talking about Mary Poppins this week. I'm sorry it's not explosions and race cars and superheroes and all that kind of stuff. But sometimes it's fun just to talk about the cool stuff, you know, the musicals. That's why Bobby Nash isn't on this episode this week, because he knew a musical was coming.
Yeah, he couldn't bolt off the station fast enough last week. As we mentioned Mary Poppins, he was like, boom, the airlock was like just on. He was pressing that button. He was out.
The airlock was spinning still. He was out. There was, you know, you see, you know, sometimes we just have to go, damn it, Barry. This time we just had to go, damn it, Bobby. So it was actually a lot of fun. So yeah, it's just been a great 2018, folks. And, you know, we're going to continue growing and bringing you new stuff and, you know, lots of movies to talk about in 2019. And, you know, but what better way to say goodbye to 2018 than next week when we put 2018 into the geek seat?
Yay.
That's right, folks. Everything you knew about 2018, the good, the bad, the ugly, we're going to talk all about it. So, you know, we're going to strap the year down. You know, it's, you thought it was gone after January 1st, but no, we're going to take one last look at it. We're going to, you know, strap it down and, you know, torture it for what it's worth. So it should be a lot of fun to talk about it. We got a great crew lined up for it. And, you know, it's one of those episodes where we take the whole episode to talk about it. So be prepared for hearing a lot of different opinions about what we thought about 2018 when we put it into the geek seat. That's right, folks. We will be talking to you lots and lots in 2019. Thank you, everyone who has stuck with us over all this time. And if you're a new listener, I hope you've enjoyed the show. And, you know, please tell your friends and neighbors. We definitely would appreciate it. That's it for this week. We will see you, everyone, in 2019. From all of us here at Earth Station One, Happy New Year and peace. And we're out of here. Ba-dum.
Ta-da. Woohoo! Yay!
Just occurred to me that the one thing I didn't mention during the show is how amusing I thought it was that most of my peeps, the geek community, has spent most of the time talking about Mary Poppins Returns, not reviewing the movie, not talking about the songs, not talking about the casting, but debating whether or not she is a Time Lord or a wizard.
Yep. Oh, yes.
Guilty! Guilty! You've been listening to the Earth Station One podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Earth Station One is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.